You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today, we're in Fino et Mausson.
Where are we, Lionel?
Where are we? We're at Mausson, overlooking the glorious lake. We can't quite see the lake, actually, but we can see Mont Blanc just behind us, which is majestic, isn't it? Absolutely stunning up here in the mountains.
We're not overlooking the lake, then, are we, if we can't see it?
Not quite. No, well, we would be able to if we stood on tiptoes. They're dismantling the Tour de France around us here. It does strike me that this tiny little place and the roads that lead to it are a little bit small for the behemoth that is the Tour de France. The Dauphiné has been here before. The Tour de l'Avenir has been here before. But I'm a little worried we're going to be stuck up here till midnight. What do you reckon?
Today was not without its challenges. Getting up here, because we were at the start as well, and we'll hear in this episode some interviews with, we've got Katarina Sagan, Peter Sagan's wife, who I spoke to at the start this morning. We'll also hear from Matt Heyman, speaking about his Orica Bike Exchange, not Orica Bike Edge, as Lionel's been calling them, Orica Bike Exchange. Teammate Adam Yates, who continues to surprise us. We've got Louis Menkes, the young South African who's riding well as well. But yeah, today's been challenging. I suffered a puncture on my Nano folding bike, which would have been absolutely ideal for getting from the car park to the press centre here. You flew away from me, Lionel.
I did,
Couldn't stop you.
Sorry about that. I mean, it was ideal. We had to... Well, I rode 3 kilometres from where we dumped the car on the side of the mountain back to the press tent here and got a phone call. And our colleague from the Telegraph, Tom, said, what does Richard want? I bet he's punctured. And unfortunately, you had punctured, and you had to walk, didn't you? A good old walk that was, wasn't it?
Good old walk, yeah. Good old walk. Anyway, let's have the tale of the attack, Lionel.
Okay, let's. So, just a couple of bits of news from the rest day. Mark Cavendish, of course, went home. Many people... Well, it was 50-50, it felt, didn't it? Whether he would go on to Paris and try and win a fifth stage, or whether he'd go home and continue his preparation for the Rio Olympics. And talking of the Olympics, Steve Cummings is going to replace Peter Kennock in the Great Britain team for the Olympic road race. But the Tour de France resumed again today with stage 17 from Bern to Finholt et Mausson, 184.5 kilometres, lots of climbing, an incredibly fast start, which put them well up on schedule and meant that it was almost 70 kilometres before the race-defining break was established. Four riders started it: Tanel Kangert of Astana, Steph Clement of IM Cycling, Christian Durasek of Lampre, and Tony Galopin of Lotto Soudal. They were joined by 7 others, including Jarlinson Pantano, who won a few days ago, Rafał Majka, who's currently the king of the mountains, Peter Sagan in the green jersey, and Ilnur Zakarin. Later on, another 8 went across, and that was the break. And by the time we caught up with the race on the Col de la Forclaz, Alexei Lutsenko was out in front on his own, and then Rafał Majka and Jarlinson Pantano made a move, and it was a bit like the move that we saw in Toculos a couple of days ago. And this being Colombian Independence Day, maybe Pantano had his sights set on a second win, but it wasn't to be, because Ilnur Zakarin bridged up to those two, and then with 6.5 kilometres to go on the final climb, he attacked. Pantano was able to respond, Majka was dropped, but Pantano's effort to try and stay with Zakarin caught him out, because 500 metres later, Zakarin went again and he rode on alone to win his first Tour de France stage. In the GC group, Astana rode very hard again but came to nothing. Alejandro Valverde sacrificed his GC chances for a Nairo Quintana attack that never came. Dan Martin had a brief spell off the front. Valverde was then dropped, and Sky were just too strong. Wout Poels in particular was impressive. Finally, Richie Porte attacked and got clear. Chris Froome in the yellow jersey waited until it was the right moment, and then he rode across to Richie Porte. Malcolm Olimar faltered, Nairo Quintana faltered, but Adam Yates did a terrific ride and lost only 8 seconds. Quintana lost 28, Olimar lost around 40, and TJ Van Garderen lost 18 minutes. No change to the jerseys, just a little shuffle of the overall positions.
A little shuffle, but this was the first of these 4 days everybody's been talking about, and it's difficult not to feel a little bit flat, a little bit dejected, because We would love for the race to be on a knife edge, for it to be a closer battle. And unfortunately, for the sake of the race, Team Sky and Chris Froome are just too strong. And you know, I think there's been a, I think that will be the dominant topic of this final week. You know, this question of what can be done about this. There's a lot of talk of, you know, the finances, the financial muscle that Team Sky have, that they're really squeezing the life out of this race. This is taking nothing away from Chris Froome's victory, but they have so many of the best riders and the strongest riders. And Froome said in his press conference at the end there that they're the only team here with eight riders here focused on one goal. And it's easy to focus on one goal when you've got the strongest guy in the race. I mean, these things often follow one another. No reason why, if Quintana wasn't riding as Chris Froome is riding, Movistar wouldn't look as good as Sky are looking now, frankly, because that's what tends to happen. But I think in this case, there's a peculiar sort of, not peculiar, but there's a particular aspect of Sky's domination that doesn't sit easily with people who want unpredictable and exciting sport. They have, bottom line is, and bottom line is an appropriate expression, because they have bought up some of the best riders in the sport, and they have guys like Wout Poels, Sergio Henao. They've given them this job of being here at the Tour de France in top shape to help Chris Froome.
Absolutely. I mean, Dave Brailsford was talking after the finish. He's the boss of Team Sky, of course, and he made some interesting comments. So let's hear a couple of the things that Dave Brailsford said after the finish here.
You know, I've been in a lot of tournaments over the years, and for me anyway, the challenge, the big challenge in sort of coming to the big events with the big stages, be it the Olympic Games, be it World Championships, or be it the Tour de France, is you've got to turn up with your A game. And it's not easy to turn up with your A game when it really matters. And sometimes it really works and you do it, and sometimes you can't, you know, you get it, you don't quite get it right. But I think that's the, you know, the strength, let's say, of the Movistar team is, you know, they're a fantastic team. They're above us in the World Tour. They've won more races than we have. You know, and they're a brilliant team, but I think for the moment, anyway, so far, we've turned up with our A game. I think, to be fair to Nairo, he's a world-class climber, and you can see that he's not quite on top of his game here, and, you know, the questions about why he hasn't attacked, I think it's a bit harsh, to be honest. He's a brilliant rider, brilliant climber, and I think, you know, if he could, he would. There was no saving anything, and, you know, like I said, he's got a lot of... He's still very relatively young, and he's carrying a lot of weight on his shoulders, and the expectation sometimes makes it difficult to, like I say, turn up with your A game. So, you know, I think he'll... who knows? He could still bounce back after this stage, and we've still got three very, very difficult days to come. So, you know, it's we are where we are now, but, you know, we'll have to see how we do it day by day through to Paris. The wrong assumption is to assume that everything's going to stay the same and that's going to be the order of the finishing guys every day, and it's not. We know it's not, because the fatigue's accumulating all the time. And there's a very violent effort for all those guys tomorrow, and that violent effort could have a big impact on the last 2 days. So I think at this stage of the game, it's very, very risky to assume anything.
Yeah, so Dave Brailsford there, really, I mean, stating the obvious in a way, that you have to come to the Tour de France with your A game, but Team Sky really have done that, and perhaps some of the other teams haven't. And when you look at the overall 26, 28-man rosters, and you see how teams are divided up amongst the different races, sometimes you don't get the sense with all the teams that they know in the beginning of the year what their long list for the Tour de France is. And with Team Sky, you definitely get the sense that their riders are being coached and being told to base their season around very key objectives. Wout Poels, for example, is here in probably the form of his life. I mean, he's never ridden this well in a Grand Tour, and he's been very impressive. But in order to do that, you know, they have to basically work 6 months in advance and come here with not just Chris Froome in great form, but the rest of the team in great form as well. And I think Movistar's very unfortunate in the sense that Nairo Quintana clearly isn't right. Whether he is ill or not, the bottom line is he's not riding as well as he has done in the last 3 years of Grand Tours that he's done. And so Sky aren't having to actually do all that much, really, are they? It's not like they're on the rack. I mean, whenever they flash up that graphic, it's always Team Sky have got four riders in the lead group and everyone else has got one or two.
Look who it is, Lionel. Come to add a bit of sunshine. We will hear soon from these other interviews I mentioned, but very importantly, just before we left the press room, I went in search of our good friend, Ciro Scognamiglio. He's sitting beside his boss, Luca, and Luca looked up as I approached and gave me a big smile, and I said, are you busy, Ciro? And Luca said, shook his head and said, no, he's not busy. He can come and join you. How are you, Ciro?
Not bad, listeners. Not in my best place to stay, as you can easily imagine. Well, you know, we are here in Finoe Mosson. I saw a lot of people making pictures, writing beautiful landscapes. Oh, this is marvelous. Sometimes I do myself a question. They are crazy or I'm crazy?
I think, well, that's a very interesting question, Ciro. And are Astana crazy? I saw you at the team buses there, sprinting after Vincenzo Nibali, as you always do. Maybe not Nibali, maybe it was Aru.
Yeah, how was my sprint, in your opinion? Was good?
Not really. Seemed better.
Yeah. You know, listeners, it's the third week also for me, and so I need a lot of rest. No, I mean, back in within the Astana team, well, I mean, they worked a lot in the final of the stage, but maybe after the work of Nibali Rosa, all we expected an attack of Fabio Aru, but he didn't attack, so this was my question. And I mean, he said that at 6Ks to go, it was too far to attack. I mean, he said, if I have to attack, I have to be sure to be a good to realize a good gap with the others, and was not the case.
What was Aru saying about? Because he is the sort of rider who, you know, needs to be able to attack in the mountains, and he does launch these exciting attacks. Don't always get him very far, but and it's extremely difficult, obviously, to do that when Sky are riding us there. What does he say about Team Sky and the way they're riding?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in a certain way, I have the impression that Aru and Astana, they are more or less convinced that the fight for the overall is almost closed, and so they are trying to recover position in the GC. As a matter of fact, Aru was in the 10th position this morning, and now he's in the 8th position. And so he will try to arrive maybe in the top 5. This could be a goal for him, even if the time trial tomorrow could be really a tricky stage for him.
Very much so. Well, listen, I heard from Malcolm Mollema at the finish. He basically said he was a bit disappointed. I think we're all a bit disappointed because he was Froome's closest challenger. He still is Froome's closest challenger. And sorry, Lionel, have you been attacked by a wasp?
I've just been attacked by some kind of flying insect. Yeah.
Well, so Barca Mollema, a little bit disappointed. His manager, Luca Guarcellina, told Kayleigh Fretz, our colleague, that Mollema often struggles the day after a rest day. Mollema didn't actually say that himself, didn't use that as an excuse. But he was a little bit disappointed to be dropped towards the top. And hopefully he'll bounce back a bit better tomorrow. The guy who continues to surprise us all is Adam Yates. You know, once again, he was the sort of best of the rest. He was the guy that led that group of GC riders over the line.
Well, on Adam Yates, I mean, the thing that struck me was just the maturity of that ride. Where he does tend to ride at the back of that GC group, doesn't he, as it slims down, and sometimes you see as riders are getting dropped, he's going round, and, you know, that's sometimes a harder way to do it, and you would... If you were just looking at the screen, and the obvious thing to say is, well, if you ride 3 or 4 places forwards, you don't have to deal with that irregular pace, perhaps. And yet, when it came to the crunch, he was incredibly patient. He didn't go into the red too much when everything was kicking off. He saved it, and then he emptied himself on the run into the line to limit his losses. And, you know, that's the sort of GC nous that you want to see from a young rider, because that's the sort of things that do win you Grand Tours, you know, as the opportunities come up.
And he's moved very close to Malcolm Mollema overall. Let's hear from Matt Heyman, who is very experienced Orica bike exchange rider, you know, road captain really at Orica, very experienced rider, who I was keen to just... He came in with the Gruppetto, Matt, as you would expect, but I was keen to hear his impressions of Adam Yates. Here's Matt Heyman. Matt,
I don't know what happened.
You don't know what happened, but Adam Yates, again, a very strong day for him. Mollema was dropped. Adam is still there. He moved to within 30 seconds of second place, so he continues to surprise us. Are you surprised by what he's doing here?
Surprised. But I think if you look at his results, it's all been there, and it just seems to be coming together for him. And he's ridden very intelligently so far in this tour, and he's still going into the unknown, I think. So he's taking it day by day, but he's got a very mature head on him, and he's racing like a GC rider of with more experience than he has.
How is he coping with it? I think there's a lot more attention, a lot more media stuff around him. How's he coping with that?
I think he's coping just fine. He's pretty driven. He knows what he wants, and he knows what he's doing, and he knows what he needs, and he's bold enough to say he's had enough and he needs a rest. And you know, he's been very relaxed. Who knows, maybe on the inside, maybe he's boiling up, and he's, but from what I've seen, he's staying relaxed. And I think he's in a bit of a situation where he's got everything to gain, and nobody's, there's no expectation, there's no pressure from the team, and I guess the only pressure on him is from himself.
He's quite quiet, but very blunt. You know, he tells you as it is, doesn't he? And he's still very young, and guys like you have far more experience on the team. Can you see leadership qualities there?
He'll tell me what he wants. He has no qualms, even if I think that, if I have a suggestion or something and he says, no, I'm not doing that. So he knows very well what he wants to do and how he wants to race, and I respect that.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
And now, Pedaleur de Charme.
That was Ciro there doing Pedaleur de Charme, little Pedaleur de Charme jingle. You say, and now Pedaleur de Charme. Remember, that was 2 years ago you recorded that, I think.
In your opinion, for me, you asked me the Pedaleur de Charme of today.
We'll get around to that in a minute, Ciro. We must thank Eurosport sponsor Pedaleur de Charme. There were lots of nominations today, actually, some ironic. Did you have any thoughts, Ciro?
Geraint Thomas.
Really? Why?
Because I saw him yesterday night, because yesterday I worked a lot in the Sky hotels, and I remained there till after dinner, I mean. And I saw him in the garden. He was going to the laundry machine, to this special laundry machine of the Team Sky, in order to have his
clothes. A cigarette?
No, his clothes. Lots ready for the next day. So you could ask me, Richard, so what does it mean? I mean, this is nothing to do with... But in my opinion, for example, I thought, well, okay, good, because, for example, this kind of teams go to a laundry machine is something that I never do. And so
he was doing his laundry.
Exactly.
They have got their own laundry truck, as mentioned, as Dave Brailsford told us on the second Saturday. Actually, there's a lot of non-charming behaviour today. The big list of penalties today issued by the jury. That looks very harsh. Shane Archbold has been done for sitting behind the team car for a little bit too long, as has Ruben Plaza. He's been docked 20 seconds. He won't care about that, because I was standing with Sam Bennett at the finish when Shane Archbold came in, and he came off on a descent very heavily. His bike was snapped in two. It was unbelievable, and he looked in a lot of pain, and he's been docked 20 seconds. That's just adding insult to injury. The Andrei Grifko, Romain Bardet, Cyril Gauthier all fined a princely sum of $29 or 29 something, $29 for peeing in public.
Yeah,
basically.
Well, that happens every day, doesn't it? There's a lot of fines for either taking a bottle at the wrong place, or taking service from the team car on the wrong side, or stopping on the wrong side of the road, or urinating in proximity to the public, hopefully not too close.
And Marcel Kittel also looks like he got a sticky bottle at one point. So no, those guys are all excluded from Pedaleur de Charme.
Who is it?
Ciro?
No, because we are here, listeners, maybe you can't see, no? Where we are.
Can't see where we are, no.
Yes, but there are a lot of people around us. They are enjoying the day. But I don't understand. I mean, we are the 20th of July, no? A month in which, normal people, in my opinion, should be on a beach or in the sea. So I must confess, I don't understand. Why so many people are here in mountains? For you, it's easy to understand.
Because I don't like the beach.
Beautiful.
So.
Mont Blanc is in the background there. It's absolutely stunning. How can you not appreciate that?
For me, Mont Blanc, as a matter of fact, could be maybe a dessert.
I'm going to jump in here and nominate somebody that quite a few listeners pointed out, Steph Clement.
I was going to say him.
I Am Cycling, because he did a heck of a lot of work for Pantano. He rode very strongly on the climb to try and set him up for a second stage win, and that's the kind of charming pedaling that we like to see.
But the thinking better to this question of Pedeler de Charme. Also, Peter Sagan. I don't know if his figure,
Well, nomination. So is he? He was ill. He was unwell today.
In a certain way, because I saw him on the finish. I mean, on a climb. That I mean, he was completely in a certain way without his clothes. Have you seen? No, during the stage that he
I mean, took his jersey off.
Yes, yeah? Exactly. He took his jersey off, and when we arrived, he realized, as usual, you know, he's normal.
He did a wheelie on the wheelie over the line. Didn't he
also used the facilities in a motorhome.
Wow,
at one
that's
point.
A triple whammy of charming
behavior. And he was in the break today.
Yeah,
I think we already owe Peter Sagan a Pedeler de Charme T-shirt. We will get that to him and to Steph Clement. Let's hear, though, from Mrs. Peter Sagan, Katerina Sagan, who was at the start today. I've said to her there were a lot of Peter Sagan fans, a lot of Slovakians at the finish a couple of days ago in Bern. And, yeah, she was there at the start, so I grabbed a quick word with her. Here is Katerina Sagan. Katerina, a lot of Peter Sagan fans here in Switzerland. Have you been on the whole race, or have you just come for these stages?
No, I've been there one, 2 days when he won yellow jersey. Then I came on 16th of July for one stage, and the day before the rest day, so when Peter won. And the rest day, and now I'm leaving again. Sorry.
He wins a lot of days.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's very, for me, it's a positive karma. It's coming back because, as we all know, last year he was second by millimeters. So now I think these three victories plus almost green jersey, we never know. But it seems like so far it's doing good. It's probably positive karma coming back.
What's clicked for him this year? Is it getting married? Is that the thing that's made a difference this year?
Oh, I don't think so. No, it's the privacy. I don't know how influential it could be for him, but I think he's all right, and he's doing it as good as he can. So.
Now, you speak lots of different languages. You worked in marketing, I believe. Is that right?
Yes. We have a family business with organic products, Sunroot. So it's also an official supplier of Tinkoff, and we are sponsoring Peter too. So. I'm more on the marketing and sales side, and Peter is kind of good face for us also.
Am I right in thinking you studied in England for a while?
Not in England. I studied in English in Slovakia. Then I studied a little bit in Prague and Netherlands. So my school was like international, more or less. And I was in Australia for a while.
Now, you're famous, of course, for the some of the videos you've done with Peter, Greece and all the rest of it. Any more plans for anything like that?
Well, there was one that was launched yesterday. I don't know if you've seen it.
Not yet, no.
Yeah, it's a four-hour Sunroot family business. So it's a little commercial, but including Peter and myself in a few various different movies.
Great.
So you can have a look.
How famous, how big is Peter in Slovakia now?
Oh, you can for sure imagine. Slovakia is a small country, and Peter is a big star, so... I think people like him and support him, which is the most important, and I'm happy that he's popular, because Peter, he's kind of a person that he's always as he is, very natural, so I think that's why people really like him.
You came out with a great quote about Peter. You said he's very simple in a complex way, I think was the quote. What did you mean by that?
As many people know, he's... simple in a way, like he takes things easy, but at the same time he's very deep in thinking, so it's not always as it seems, because he has a big personality inside.
There's more to him than we realize.
No, absolutely, but he only showed to those who he wants to.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring us at the Tour de France. They are our fantastic partners here and beyond. Thank you to them. Remember, hashtag more than a race for their alternative coverage of the tour, or go to rafa.cc more than a race. Now, Lionel, you were busy at the finish.
Yeah, well, I'm just standing here relieved that the sun has finally gone behind the mountain there, because my big pink head with very little sun cream on it has taken a bit of punishment today. It's extremely hot up here, wasn't it? And you know the sun's strong when you're quite high up. But, yeah, I was down at the team buses when the GC group came in, and I grabbed a quick word with Louis Menkes of Lampre Merida. I think over the winter, Rich, we were quite surprised that he had left Dimension Data, a South African rider, you know, a potential GC rider, as he's proving in this tour. 4 days to go, and he's slipped a little, I think, 10th overall. That's an impressive performance. So let's hear from Louis Menkes. I started by asking him, pointing out that he's climbing very well, he's climbing with the best in the world, and asked him what it's like to be up there in the company of Quintana, Chris Froome, and the rest.
Yeah, another tough day. It was a really good stage for me, so yeah, happy.
Very fast start though.
Yeah, I think we did 50 k's per hour for the first start, but yeah, for me that's actually good. It tires out some of the other riders before we hit the climb, so yeah.
Can you explain just how strong Sky are and how difficult it is to do anything against them?
Yeah, it's Sky is definitely really strong, and but we've seen Astana also today looking really good, and it's more that there's a few strong teams. It's not just Sky that's dominant. So.
And what do you think you can do in the next couple of days? The time trial obviously tomorrow. Presumably you want to get to Paris in the highest position possible. So does that mean you have to ride a little bit conservatively? You won't take risks?
No, it's I think if the opportunity's there, I'll definitely give it a go. So yeah, I think I've already had a pretty good performance, so there's no reason to just go out there and try something.
And what do you think of the other team's tactics? I mean, do you think there's anything that they could be doing? Astana have a couple of riders, Movistar have a couple of riders.
It's really hard because you're only racing GC with one guy, and you have to make sure he gets the result. So yeah, it's actually pretty hard to do anything else than what the teams are doing at the moment. So yeah, just control it, make it as hard as possible, and then a little effort at the end and see if you can get a split.
So Ciro, that seemed like a good signing for Lampre Merida. It's turning out pretty well. Does he fit in well there, do you think?
Yes, certainly. And yes, it's true. It was a little bit strange that last year he left the Dimension Data. But we have also to consider that Lampre Merida as a South African team manager, Brent Copeland. So, I mean, it was very close to Menties. I had the possibility to speak to him this winter in a training camp of Lampre with Menties. He has really an interesting story. And moreover, we remember very well that in the last Vuelta he arrived 10th, in the 10th position. And if I'm not wrong, it was the first real African rider, in the sense that for sure Chris Froome was born in Nairobi, all we know this, but he's Britain in a certain way. So Menkes was the first to finish a Grand Tour in the first 10 position, born in South Africa and in Africa. And so he's really a good guy for the GC. Who knows? I mean, it could be for Lampre, would be really the goal, the target is to finish with him in the first 10 position. The Tour de France would be a kind of milestone also for African cycling, yes. And to close, dear listeners, my last thing, because unfortunately I have to go. I mean, I don't know, maybe Lionel is not agree with me, but sea and beaches are really better than Mont Blanc. Believe me, trust me.
See you in France, Ciro.
With that, I mean, that's the equivalent of the microphone drop, isn't it, from
Ciro?
If we trusted him with his own microphone, he would have just dropped it
everything.
And walked off the stage. It quite. And now he's jogging. Look at that.
That's not jogging, that's sprinting. That's sprinting, Lionel. Wow, that's the famous Ciro sprint. We captured that on camera last year. Must do that again this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Should we wrap things up?
No, we've got to talk about the stage winner.
A couple of days ago,
we really did do a slight disturbance.
I don't think anybody noticed.
Maybe they did notice and they were shouting at us.
I don't remember who won, though. Giving
it its due. It was a two-man finish the day before the rest day. Oh, my goodness. This just shows you what a sort of mental merry-go-round
Peter Sagan.
Tour de France is.
You're talking about Peter Sagan ahead of Christoph.
That's right. And I mean,
it was very close. Are we going to talk about that now?
Well, no, but Christoph, he said that he got his lunge for the line wrong. Peter Sagan got his lunge for the line right. You know, Christoph has not had a great tour, the Norwegian sprinter for Katusha. We were expecting a bit more.
But Katusha rescued their tour today.
They certainly did. Lovely. What a link. What a link. Yeah. And, you know, coming in the wake of the McLaren report into the extent of doping in Russia, I think nearly 600 positive tests covered up by the Russian lab, 26 of them cyclists. Zakharin is the only Russian in this race, and so a little bit of the spotlight of that story fell on him a couple of days ago and on the rest day. And the first thing he said about it was that, well, I'm not tested in Russia because I compete all around Europe and the world, and so I'm tested by the UCI and the anti-doping bodies in the countries that he's competing in. And so that's an extremely valid point. He was asked about it this evening, and you know, he more or less said that it wasn't something that concerned him, although it would concern him if Russia are kicked out of the Olympics, of course, because he's in their road race team.
And he looks like he's coming into a bit of form. That was a very good ride by him today. Let's not forget too that he is somebody who's failed a drugs test in the past when he was 19 years old, very young,
for an anabolic steroid, and he was riding for a Russian setup then, wasn't he? And you know, there are question marks about the culture in Russian sport, clearly as a result of all of the information that's coming out. And you do wonder, with 19-year-olds, how much of that is, you know, how aware are the athletes of the programs that they are
we
on?
We spoke about Zakharin a lot at the Giro. I think he was somebody we wanted to really get to know, and I tried on several occasions to interview him because I think he does understand English, but he's very shy. And I spoke to Ekimov, Vyacheslav Ekimov, one day, who is the director at Katusha, a former rider himself, a long time teammate of Lance Armstrong at US Postal. That was an interesting conversation with Ekimov about Zakharin. And you know, I asked him, and we will play this interview at some point when it's relevant to play it, I think, but asked him a lot about Zakharin, where he was from and what he was like, and you know, about the positive test and what the circumstances were around that. And he just thought, it was a mistake, I think he said, words to that effect, which, you know, yeah, that, a 19-year-old, we don't know really the full story behind it, whether, you know, how much responsibility to assign to Zakharin, although ultimately it is the athlete's responsibility, and the athlete pays the penalty. And it's a blot on his name, isn't it? And he's going to be asked about it whenever he has a big result, and that's as it should be.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he's another rider who's, you know, putting together a fair old body of work now, isn't he? I mean, he's won the Tour of Romandy, he's been impressive in week-long stage races. He was riding extremely well in the Giro until he had that crash. Mm. I mean, he did have one bad day before the crash, where his
time trial,
and his podium chances evaporated there. But then he had the very spectacular crash on the
It was on the same descent as Kruiswijk, wasn't it?
But it was well poised, and here obviously he's lost time in the Pyrenees, and I think, well, he was one of the first to lose time at Le Lyrain in the Massif Central, wasn't he? And that was the end of any chance of a top 10 position. But he did say tonight that his goal was to try and win a stage in this third week, and he's been on the attack, hasn't he? He's had that freedom to go away, and he's clearly a very dangerous operator. And he made Micah, who is the king of the mountains and has also been on the attack an awful lot, look quite pedestrian, and he made Pantano suffer.
Always funny, isn't it, in a Grand Tour, how you get to the third week and these final days, and it does tend to be the same guys. We saw at the Giro as well, Joe Dombrowski was one of them. Atapuma was another one. You saw the same guys on the attack every day, and here it's Micah, it's Pantano, Zakharin. I'd expect to see those guys on the attack again the next. Well, not tomorrow because it's a time trial.
Well, nobody will be attacking in a time trial, Rich.
Well, you never know. Anyway, we should wrap things up. Kilometer zero today was Bernardino, the Badger.
Oh, terrific.
The Badger.
I had nothing to do with that, so I can say.
Well, yeah, a little
terrific.
Bit to do with it. But we heard in that one from David Walsh, from William Fotheringham, from Greg and Cathy LeMond, and from the Badger himself, an interview done by Daniel Freib. And tomorrow, what we've got tomorrow? We've got Lantern Rouge, and that is a little look at Sam Bennett's tour. Sam Bennett is the Lantern Rouge. He may well reach Paris as a Lantern Rouge, the last man. And we've been kind of following him throughout the tour and even before the tour. because last year was a real baptism of fire for him at the Tour, and he was determined to come here and finish. He crashed on the first day, so he's been up against it from the start, but he's getting closer to Paris, and I think he's quite confident now he will. He was pretty sprightly at the finish today, so looking good for Sam Bennett. So kilometre zero tomorrow will be on Sam Bennett. And we should leave it there, Lionel.
Thank you very much. Because we're quite a long way from our chalet this evening, aren't we? We've got a couple of hours in the car.
And we're going to be in the chalet for the next 3 days, aren't we?
We are. Looking forward to that. We've got a little event at the chalet, Le Gietaz.
Thursday evening.
Tomorrow evening, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think podcast live.
There's a barbecue.
Lots of people, friends of the podcast will be there. Really looking forward to that. So we should get off the mountain. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.